Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprint, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next 2 hours. I don't have a guest scheduled for this evening. What I was hoping to do and what I will be doing is a continuation of the series that we started last week. First with Michael Anthony on Thursday the 6th, and then on Friday the 7th with Jim Murray, we continued a discussion about general problem solving, communication, and then the issue of relationships, individuality, taking responsibility, and different ways to tie that all together. And we're going to be talking about the same thing, actually. To tell you the truth, I got quite a bit of email from people, both following the show on Thursday, some during the show, as well as on Friday, and all throughout the weekend. And here we are on the 10th, except for the East Coast and the Central Time Zone. Now it's 11:11, one of those interesting dates. And so people are still asking for a bit more teaching in that area. And of course, I love this aspect of consciousness and metaphysics. What I don't take great delight in is the numerous references we must make in regard to the number of people who are unconscious or asleep, as we like to say. In the Patriot world, those folks are referred to as the sheeple, and that's because they are followers, much like a herd of sheep, in case you were wondering where that term came from. Sheep tend to follow each other, especially when they're being led back to be fed or to be taken to a particular place where they associate it with a good feeling and the opportunity to relax. And so sheeple are the people who you can easily herd into a living room to sit around a television set, maybe sitting on a couch or an armchair, munching on potato chips and drinking a rather large amount of beer, and maybe falling asleep in front of the television set or just kicking back and not doing anything important. Now, while that's going on, there are other people out there that are apprising themselves of what's happening in the world and looking for solutions, coming up with things that people might do to change their reality. Ultimately, this is all about freedom. And so we're going to talk about that in a moment. Before I go into that in any great depth, I want to give out some numbers because I am going to be taking some calls from the listening audience, answer any questions, maybe talk about this a little bit in a practical sense in case you have any concerns about how you approach taking responsibility and acknowledging your individuality, and then even approaching the aspect of creativity from a sovereign point of view or from a sovereign standpoint. And then I'm going to expand the talk after we do a little bit of reviewing. Also, I'm going to go into the issue of order. And this is going to progress as we go along so that we see that there are quite a few things that we have to tackle before we can totally liberate ourselves and experience creative freedom. Okay, the numbers to call in to ask a question or make a comment about this topic The toll-free number in the USA and Canada, 888-228-4494. And worldwide, area code 877-489-6350. And the direct line in the United States, or for that matter, wherever you are, if you don't mind paying for the call, area code 530-776-5154. And, of course, we could give out more numbers, but that's not really necessary right now because the lines are not burning up yet. Once they start burning up, we'll throw out some more numbers. In the meantime, we're going to take just a little short break here so that I can sort of get in the frame of mind to review this and possibly take some of your calls. So you're listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and we'll be right back. Don't go away.
Idaho Observer, a monthly 24-page newspaper in its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few remaining newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you? Subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues, the Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307.
Hemp, the superfood for you and your family. Hemp has nutritional values that far exceed any known plant. Hemp, used for food, clothing, and shelter since time began. Hemp, this God-given food source is controlled by your government, making it not legal to grow for American people and farmers, but legal to import. Our founding fathers grew hemp because they knew of the benefits it offered. The protein powder, seeds, and oil are available through hempusa.org. Recommended daily intake of this food source will allow the body to heal itself from many ailments. Loaded with potassium, magnesium, calcium, essential fatty acids, amino acids, and nutrients not available in other plants. Hemp can be stored with a long shelf life as a life-sustaining food source for you and your family. Could this be the government's best-kept secret? Call today at 908-691-2608 and see what the powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Learn. Help. Shop at hempusa.org. We do not charge for shipping. That's 908-691-2608 or go to hempusa.org today.
Welcome back to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff. As I mentioned, no guest this evening except for you who would like to call in and ask some questions. I'm going to do a little bit of reviewing on the topic that we've been discussing last couple of nights on the show, going back to last Thursday and Friday. If you haven't heard those shows, it might behoove you to go back and download the archive and have a listen. The shows were actually real close. Thursday night was about 2 hours and 40 minutes long. We went an extra 40 minutes, Michael Anthony and I, to cover these topics in more detail. And it was kind of interesting because we were talking about sort of a procedure for organizing information when you have a problem and you're trying to solve it, and you have to look at it kind of objectively and not so emotionally, which we tend to do. And we referenced chaos and all the underlying issues that cause us to sort of attack the problem out of emotion or just purely out of thought, without really discerning what's going on, without trying to communicate with other people that we might have to communicate with. It was kind of an interesting exercise because we were able to actually apply the lesson right there on the spot. Then with Jim Murray, the second night, we went into the issue of super consciousness, and that's really just perceiving what is beyond your everyday mundane world. It's nothing like Superman per se, other than when you tap into super consciousness, maybe you can do some things like Superman or Superwoman or Superboy or Supergirl, I guess. And then you could throw in some other characters, I guess, Spider-Man and Batman. Now, the point here is, you know, the cartoons and the stories that we grew up with as children were actually, in a way, pointing out that there are some abilities that people have that are far beyond your imagination. And if you take those possibilities just as aspects of entertainment, like a cartoon or a weekly, what they called the serial, which was a show that would pick up the following week. Flash Gordon was one, Outer Space, and there were others where you had these heroes. Every week they would do something, they might get in some trouble, and then they would solve the problem the next week and then get in some other trouble. So it was a recurring thing of trouble, solve the problem, problem, reaction, solution. That's kind of what governments do today when they create problems for us. And as we're making an attempt to, first of all, recognize that there is a problem and what the problem actually is, people are doing really crazy things all around us. And we're learning to recognize the fact that how we're thinking about that definitely influences the outcome of these problems. And then if we make an attempt to sort of raise the vibration of the general consciousness, we can many times affect these things in such a way that they don't even happen. Now, many of the issues that mankind is facing are created intentionally. They're created by governments for the purpose of driving us into or herding us into a corral, so to speak, like when I was using the example of the sheeple, getting us into a pen, getting us into an area where we will all respond in the same fashion. And this is done through the media. It's done through advertising. It's done even through our education. And believe it or not, now it's being done regularly through religion. So all the things that we come into contact with on a daily basis are having a big impact on on our perceptions, on our thoughts, on our emotions, and really in terms of what reality is. We have a new reality that's been created for us. Many, many people are so wrapped up in it that they're unaware that this is even going on. A perfect example would be this presidential election that just occurred. None of what happened made any sense. You had all kinds of people going crazy over a candidate that has yet to prove he's an American, that's mired in controversy, yet these people, because they're just being the sheeple, don't know specifically what the issues are. And there are no issues. This campaign was run literally on no issues whatsoever, other than a promise for change. And we have change right now. We're going down the drain. Every day it's getting worse. And it's designed to do that. So there's no special change that's going to occur unless we influence it, unless we make that determination. One person is not going to cause a positive change for 300 million or for going on 7 billion people. One person is not going to do that. And this business of we have a Messiah, a Savior, it's not an issue of what color this person is. Many people are trying to turn the discussions about Barack Obama into racial issues. My beef is purely that the man has not provided any proof that he's an American. There are a lot of people, even on this network, who are promoting Barack Obama. I don't wish him any ill will, but then again, I'm very suspicious of someone that's not from this country. They have no business running this country. Let him run the country from where he's from, if he could tell you that. That's how serious this issue is. You see, I'm speaking now about problems. I'm speaking about one particular problem, but we have tons of problems like this. I mean, we could talk about abortion and not whether or not it's a convenient issue for a mother, but what about all the millions of babies that are destroyed every year because abortions are legal? What do you know about the procedure of an abortion? Have you seen it? And can you see it and then say that you're still for it? It's disgusting. It's gross. What happens? It's demeaning. And it's murder. It's a medical excuse to murder an unborn child. And this is the depravity of our society today, that we have been numbed down and desensitized to all of these horrific things that are being done to people. You have children being abducted and raped and murdered in smut films. I mean, this goes on. And it's being done by people in the government. This is what's crazy about it. It's not just the ordinary criminals. These are criminals in white shirts and ties and suits committing these acts. And these are problems. And yet, most people are thinking to themselves, well, you know, I'm busy, and what am I going to do? I'm just one person, and, you know, I just don't have time to get involved in all that stuff. Until it's your kids that are missing. Then you change. And many people who this has happened to now are singing a different tune. When they've been affected, when they've lost a child that's been abducted and maybe sold into slavery in another planet, let alone another country. I mean, we have interplanetary travel today. Stop and think. Do you know when your child is missing, do you know where they've taken your child? You likely are never going to see your child again unless we do something about this. And we have to take all kinds of precautions, all kinds of steps to stop this from happening. because it's being condoned by governments. And this may sound like a wild accusation. Read anything on the Franklin cover-up or anything on the McMartin School in Southern California. Just Google the words McMartin School, and you'll see that there's a huge case that actually was verified after the charges were dropped. There was that excavation that occurred at this daycare school, and they uncovered tons of information, tons of proof that kids had been taken underneath the school and subjected to things like animal torture. And of course, they were assaulted by adults. And they found proof of this after the investigation was closed. So when we look at these things, these are just a couple of examples. These are big problems that we have, and there are ways to solve problems. But we don't solve them when we run away from them in fear, and we will never solve them when we deny that they really exist. So our topics last week dealt with these issues: facing the problem, admitting it in a serious fashion. And normally you're going to be solving these problems with other folks in your community. Could be family members, it could be neighbors, it could be people from all over the community getting together, or even a wider area. The intention, however, should be such that you are going to accomplish something. You know, I'm asked once in a while to pray for somebody, and sometimes I offer to pray. More than not, I offer to pray for someone's loved one, or for a friend who might be sick. And I pray with the expectation that the prayer has already been answered, with the understanding and the conviction that prayer has already been answered even before I say it. And it's a definitely a positive way to approach solving a problem. You could pray literally to come up with a solution to a problem. You could pray that solution would come. How often do we take that approach? We usually think things out. We usually use what I called, or what I identified as, the head heart. That's the heart that we feel in our thoughts, and we identify it with the ego. This is the heart that reacts to the emotions that you see in a TV commercial or in a movie. Maybe when you get moved by a story that you're hearing from another person, and you have not really been able to detach yourself from your ego self, which some will call the lower self. Now, we have a caller on line four. Is it Dawn from Wilmington?
Dawn in Wilmington, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you this evening, Dawn?
Listen, I just have a kind of a brief comment about kind of your tirades on abortion. And just bear with me here, because I know the other night one of your guests really kind of gave some graphic descriptions of what goes on.
Mm-hmm.
I always feel assaulted by that, because I think abortion is disgusting and reprehensible. But whenever people decide to just throw that kind of really graphic imagery upon me, I really feel violated, first thing. Second thing, it is kind of problematic when men talk about abortion with women's bodies. Apart from the morality of it, it's just a problematic issue. And the third thing is, I think that the way abortion is framed, it's very materialistic, because people talk about, there's a girl that's in law school in America, and she's proposes amendment that life begins at conception. Well, can you really consider, you know, a zygote to be a human being When does the soul enter the body? This is the problem I have with abortion. Yes, late-term abortions are horrible, especially if the soul has entered the fetal body. But until the soul enters the body, it's just tissue. I mean, you
okay.
don't think of abortion as being a problem, do
can
you?
Can I comment on that, Dawn?
Sure.
Oh, okay. First of all, it takes a man and a woman to make a baby. Do you agree?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think if a man and a woman get together with the intention of, I'm just creating a hypothetical here, with the intention of creating a baby, they get into an agreement with each other that, you know, they're married, they want to start a family, and about halfway through the pregnancy, the wife decides she doesn't want to have the baby. Does the father not have any right to that child? And let's not determine exactly where life begins in terms of the soul, because you have no way of knowing if that soul is in the baby or not.
Actually, religiously, Orthodox Jews have certain times that they specify that the soul enters the body, believe it or not, legally. And many religions do have determinations. I think the Catholic Church, before all of this life begins at conception, you know, in medieval times, there are times that they really specify
okay.
that the soul enters the body. Now,
okay, if I can comment on that, again, uh-huh. that's based on a belief system, right?
Right.
It's not conclusive proof. So I'm not saying that the Jews are right or the Jews are wrong or the Catholics are right
that,
or the Catholics are wrong.
I was just using that as an example.
Let me finish. I understand. Let me finish making my statement now. So there's the issue of a husband and wife where one of the partners decides all of a sudden they don't want to have the baby. It could be the man pressuring the woman to get an abortion, too. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the act of an abortion is the issue that's here. We're not describing this to insult anyone or to make someone be upset, but how would you feel if you really knew? See, this is the issue that I'm bringing up here, is that people don't really know. Or most people don't really know what goes on, even women that
have
had an abortion.
Fairs, I have been to state fairs in North Carolina where they had all the pictures on the wall. I don't think that's the issue. I'm just telling you that as an innocent bystander with something that I'd never do, I always feel terribly assaulted and violated when that gets thrown into my face, okay? I'm just speaking personally.
Oh, okay, well,
right.
then
now,
you have the opportunity, Dawn, when I do discuss that, to
mm-hmm.
take your fingers and plug your ears up.
I'm just sharing no. because, you know, you have a right to broadcast what you want, and you have a great show. But I'm just
Thank
telling you.
You,
you know, I always feel violated and assaulted. Now, the thing is, you made the example of the husband and the wife. All right, they have
yeah.
entered into a legal and a spiritual contract that is different from people that just have flings and then someone gets knocked up, and then it's
or someone who is raped, for example. That
or
I mean, that
for instance,
yeah,
it's really a different thing. And I do think it's a shame that men do lose their rights a lot of times when women just kind of decide that, you know, they're just going to take it upon themselves to end a pregnancy. On the other hand, if a woman is an incubator for another body and something is growing in her body, there's just no way you can get around the fact that she has dominion over her body. Now, the problem is what we have to do is instill moral standards in everybody, but ultimately it is the woman's choice as long as it's not a baby and the soul has not entered that fetus. Now, that's my personal feeling. I can't imagine anybody aborting anything
mm-hmm.
like after 6 months, but when you're talking about like a couple of cells or a couple of million cells, when it's just a something in a petri dish, that is not a baby, and people are deluding themselves, and they're doing a great
okay.
service every day.
Okay, Dawn, how many women have petri dishes inside their womb?
No. My point is, so if it's just at a very inchoate stage, it's not a baby. And if there's no soul in it, then for God's sake, it's just tissue. It's material.
Okay. Okay, if we know definitively that until there's a soul, it's not a baby, you have to know definitively at what point the soul enters that baby. It could enter the first soul, for all you know. Or,
That's
I mean,
true.
The first cell, for all you That's, know. And so it's a soul
I mean,
in one cell.
For that matter, all cells have life. Everything, stones have life, trees have lives. But it's our job as human beings, and as God-inspired human beings, to put some kind of moral parameters on everything. I mean, you know, the Jains don't step on ants because they're afraid they're going to violate that. How far are you going to take, you know, it's just going to be to ridiculous extremes. I mean,
okay,
it's the same
well,
sort of thing,
then,
not stepping on an ant, not killing, you know, a newly conceived embryo.
Well, what would be wrong with all the way across the board, Dawn, not...
Well, we're going to have to agree to disagree.
Not killing anything and just respect all life. Are you going to make respecting a life...
Saying, have you ever listened to the Jains philosophies where they talk about, you know, you have to watch where you step because you'll step on an ant and kill life? I mean, at some point, you know, incarnating into the physical world is a rough and tumble proposition. If we wanted everything to be perfect, we would not have come to this plane. So there's a lot of give and take, and it's not perfect. And we just have to make best judgments on things. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah,
no
I agree with you. I mean, if I'm in, if I'm
bodies,
infested with back... Dawn, can I speak,
people?
Please? If I'm infested with bacteria, obviously I'm going to want to kill those bacteria, right? If it's caused an infection or something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to draw a line, I think, there. I'm not going to say, well, you know, there's a friendly bacteria, and it's my fault that I got them, and so I have to let them live on until they kill me and everyone that comes into contact with me. I think we have to draw a line somewhere. But where we can consciously preserve life that's worth preserving, and I'm not talking about pestilence, I'm talking about life that is progressing like we are, that's evolving and that has a soul, and it's not up to us to determine at what point. I think the issue I'm making here, Dawn, is that we take responsibility before we act. It's not just doing it and then saying, okay, am I going to take responsibility or am I going to look for a scapegoat here? I think we need to be...
Okay, let me just make one more point, because I'm not going to belabor this, because I've made my points clear and you can take them or leave them. But for instance, childbirth for any woman is a very dangerous activity. You can die from that. Your body goes through extreme changes. It's extremely painful. And you can say, yeah, well, you should have thought of that before. But the point is, if a man had to have that forced upon him to actually risk his life to give birth, something that can rupture your internal lots of things, cause damage for the rest of your life, hypothetically, and women have lost their lives in childbirth, I'm just saying that the only thing you can do is raise daughters and sons to be moral people. But ultimately, the judgment as to whether to have a baby, especially before it becomes a real baby with a soul, has got to lie with the woman. It just has.
Oh, well, I'm not saying the woman has no right. In fact, I'm really against the government telling people, you know, what they can and they can't do.
Exactly. If you're a libertarian, you know, how can you tell anybody to do anything with their bodies? I mean, I am actually, on a certain level, I'm pro-life. But I'm pro-life if it's really a life. But I'm not going to quibble over a multi-celled embryo. I'm just not going to do it. And I think it's just insane for people to do that. It's the utmost materialistic philosophy imaginable in my book. Totally materialism.
Well, it's your opinion. I have to say this, that there are plenty of women that have had babies, okay? In fact, if it weren't for your mother having you wouldn't be here having this conversation with me.
Yeah, that almost descends into the level of being trite, because...
No, not at all.
Not at all.
I'm honoring the life. Yes, having a baby is dangerous, you said, but if it weren't for that risk that your mother took, you wouldn't be here, and I wouldn't be here.
That's a heroic act, but you can't force them to do that.
Well, that's not what this discussion is really about. This discussion is about someone engaging in an activity. See, we're talking about integrity here. We're talking about a quality of life, honoring life, and living in the highest way possible.
Okay?
Being responsible for your decisions. You see, it's not an issue of, well, you know, I messed up, so, you know, I've got this abortion in my back pocket, you know, let's just do the abortion thing, and I can go ahead again and be irresponsible with my actions.
Okay, well, what about something like a morning after pill? What do you think about that?
Well, it's the same thing. I mean, if if you are procreating or you're engaging in sexual intercourse just for the feeling, then you're not honoring the whole picture there. You see, I'm against the pills too. I think these pills do many other things than what we're told they do.
I think so too, and I think they disrupt the natural give and take of.
Yeah, I have strong feelings about that, but this is good.
You know, we're priests on high in an ivory tower pontificating about this, but where the rubber meets the road, it gets to be a very personal decision. And like I say, you just have to inculcate morals into people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, law can only do so much. It's just like with constitutionalism. I was reading an article on the web the other day, and it was saying that, you know, it's not the Constitution that makes people behave like that. It's the people who already have that kind of constitutional integrity, and they can bring that to the law. You can't impose it from the top down. It's got to come from the bottom up.
I agree.
That kind of morality.
And ultimately, Don, I started this show off tonight, like I did the last two, talking about the ultimate goal of reaching our God-given sovereignty and our freedom and experiencing and living our freedom so that we can be the creative individuals that we were made to be and that we can experience life from that standpoint, not from one of slavery, not from one of oppression. So, you know, I'm with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying in terms of us taking on a responsibility of bringing another life into the world, we should be responsible. We should think that through all the way and live a life of integrity.
Well,
that's,
you know,
going to be.
I'm not going to say any more after this is my last comment, but you know what? Passion has never been under the aegis of rationality, and we are human beings, and I'm telling you, you're arguing from an ivory tower position.
Oh, no, not at all. You're totally wrong about that.
No, but I'm just saying, Pat, when people are passionate, I know what you're saying, and in the confines of marriage, it's a kind of a different thing. But, yeah, I'm just looking at people on a societal basis. You know, you just got to be a little more practical.
Should I be nonchalant about this?
Of course I'm passionate about this.
I'm passionate.
But when people are in the throes of passion, it's just.
Don, you're being passionate, and you're not letting me get my sentence out. If you would be so kind, I let you speak.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Tell me what is wrong with passion. You tell me what is wrong with being committed about any cause that's a worthy cause. What is wrong with that?
I'm very committed to things, and there's no. I think there's a wonderful. There's much to be said for it. But I'm just saying, not everything can be looked at in moments of passion with a cool, calm, collected head.
Yeah, well, you know, it's. I think we're kind of dealing with semantics and going around in circles now.
Okay.
I take your points as you delivered them. I may not agree with everything you say, but I think definitely you have an issue about just the thought of. Of having a baby, you feel that somehow just the act of or that aspect of expressing love with the male counterpart.
Hang on.
I haven't finished making my statement. You reacted very vehemently about the whole issue as if just my talking about this is a personal attack on you.
Oh, my question was, it's not having a baby. We didn't talk about having a baby. I'm talking about when you talk about how that's done. That is just really, I didn't invent it.
No, but I happened to see it about a week ago, and I was very disgusted by it.
Okay,
we're talking over each other, Dawn. I'm making a statement, okay? I don't get pleasure out of seeing that. I watched it. In fact, I could only watch half of the movie.
Right.
But it was from a clinical perspective about a very real type of procedure that's been going on for years.
You misconstrued what I said. I attacked the death. I didn't attack the life, and that was really unfair to me, and you almost owe me an apology. So anyway, I love life. I am pro-life, but I don't like people throwing death in my face and misconstruing things unnecessarily.
No, the issue was you considered it wasn't an issue until the soul was in the body. You tell me
baby,
on what
absolutely.
Expertise you can make that statement. What is your expertise to know the exact moment the soul comes
yours?
In the body? And
what
then I'll publish
yours,
that on my show.
I know. And you tend to be very domineering with your guests. But anyway, you've got a great show, and thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you for your call. Call in again.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Okay. I'm sure Don means well, and that was an interesting call. Of course, when I talk about these things, and I've talked about murder on this show, and some people don't like that to be talked about, but it's an issue that has affected most families around the world. Almost everybody knows someone who's either been murdered or has a friend who's got a family member that's been murdered. And we're living in times where this is just considered to be normal. It's a regular topic on the news. It's a regular topic in TV shows and the movies. It seems you can't have a movie without someone being murdered. And now there are some sitcoms where they have that. I mean, even cartoons these days now, they have cartoon characters being killed. And that's not an exaggeration. It's a way that they desensitize us to these types of issues. And I think my particular issue with abortion is our insensitivity to the whole issue. Whether you feel that the soul is in the body when it's just a few cells there or when it's a recognizable body, you don't know unless you have that spiritual knowledge. And you're talking about some pretty lofty knowledge there. I, as a psychic, can't tell you. I can maybe sense in an individual case that there's a soul in the body. Even the mother could sense that, I think. And the baby wouldn't necessarily have to be kicking for her to know that. And because the baby's kicking doesn't mean the soul is in the body. I think every case is unique. I think some souls may come into the body 1 or 2 seconds before the baby actually leaves the womb. So it's not a cut and dry issue. What I'm talking about is honoring life, honoring the life experience, the sovereignty of the individual, and I'm speaking on everyone's behalf, everyone who's listening. You have a right to make choices about your life, about your body, about what you eat, about what you do for a living, when you do it, and how you do it, as long as you're not infringing on the sovereignty of others. And my biggest issue is the government intrusion on our sovereignty, or the government's inability to follow the very laws that they create and expect us to follow. Those are some of my pet peeves, and I'm sure the listening audience has them out there. I'm speaking to many, many people. I can't tailor this speech to suit everyone. Some people might get upset. So I honor that. I acknowledge that. But I think the conversations go two ways. Part of what we talked about on Thursday and Friday, and this was not pontificating. I wasn't on an ivory tower, and I'm not right now, but I do happen to have a radio show. And I would say, if you have a particular point that you want to get across and you don't feel you can get it across on my show, maybe you should consider hosting your own show. That's always a possibility you have. I'll support you in that too. I may call into your show and voice my opinions on some things. In fact, I do that with some shows. That's the way we communicate. But this is about communication and finding a common ground and in a serious manner talking about these things. I get angry about some things, just like Dawn got upset about a few things. There were some things that didn't resonate rightly with her. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't be able to talk about these things. It really doesn't. These things are important to a lot of people. I know people who have found out that their spouse had an abortion, and after they had made an agreement. And I think, you know, two people that are making that kind of decision should be able to make that together. They should come to some agreement. Just because somebody wants to go dancing is not necessarily a reason to end a life, or that they decide that they made a big mistake. There are ways to give a baby up for adoption, for example, in a wholesome way, not to a corrupt system that's gonna expose the child to pedophilia. That's not what I'm talking about. And that goes on. And that's a problem that we must learn to face and discuss. All of our problems, really, our educational system has major problems. And we must be able to solve any problem, sit down in a serious manner. It doesn't have to be a solemn, sad matter, but it's in the spirit of arriving at a solution, coming to some conclusions on what we can change to make things better. Now, when we're stifled the way we are, when we're propagandized, when we're mind-controlled and brainwashed into believing things that really aren't true about our nature and about what's going on in the world, we accept anything except what is real. And we lose our abilities to tap into our higher gifts. We're created by God with many, many more gifts than we ever use. Now, I've got another call on the line, and it looks like it's Reverend Roxy Hampton. Is that true?
Yes, Don.
Reverend, what's up, girl?
Oh, I was just listening in the conversation. I just got home from my new job, Don. Reverend Roxy took a job.
You're
getting rough out here.
You didn't.
I did. So just got home, but I heard your conversation with the other lady. I don't know what y'all was getting into, but she wished you luck. And then I heard one of my favorite words, which is soul. And I thought, oh, maybe they was talking about soul. And so I thought, man, I love to talk about soul, because for me, it's about the essence and the spirit of the individual. Soul.
Did you hear much of that conversation, Rev?
No, I didn't. Except the end where she hung up.
Well,
I don't want to go over it because it might be, but if you want to discuss it, because I love to talk about the soul. There's the mind, the body, the soul. You know, for me, the soul is mentioned in the Bible many times, so it must exist. It must have character. It must have some kind of tangible, measurement. There has to be some kind of way to compare it against something else that is not soul. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I love the discussion of soul. It may take us into the spirit. And you can't get lost in the spirit, but you have to have the essence, the fundamentals of what that means, right? And then, you know, I talk about soul. It is. It is.
Well, I had a call from a lady that wanted to express the fact that when I brought up the issue of abortion, that she felt violated, and of course, I'm just discussing the issue and the fact that people are rather flippant about it and nonchalant. It's like, well, if it's okay to get it, you know, let's get one, and if we don't feel like it today, we don't have to. You know, we can maybe do this the last minute of the ninth month. This is the kind of thing that's going on today. And it used to be in the beginning that a woman would have to get an abortion, let's say, you know, by no later than the first trimester. And now, I mean, it doesn't matter when it is, they do it any time. Well, this lady took offense to the fact that I was talking about this, but this is an issue.
It definitely is an issue, and it's one that I and Dr. Len, we talk about a lot. As if it is difficult for people to talk about abortion, it is as very difficult for me to talk about mutations and what we have done to our gene pool and what types of, when we talk about alcohol and terrorism births or monster babies and these types of things, our genetics have been mutated through a lot of different things in the universe. And so here we are, we didn't heed Mueller in his prize-winning Nobel lecture that talked about what any high-energy radiation can do to the genes and the chromosomes, and that we were cautioned to protect the gonads, our ovaries and our, you know, and the other parts. I know my parts. I don't know what you call yours. And so we've entered into this new realm. It's like we've got our hands on some kind of poison, and now our whole gene pool has been DNA. And this is what we're talking about in terms of the types of things that have been mutating, the types of diseases and flesh-eating bacteria that we are using, this whole thing of the AIDS and the blood-borne diseases that we know are reality, because more and more people are suffering from chronic illnesses. More of our children are being born with chronic illnesses and are taking more drugs. So when we begin to talk about abortion in a lot of different ways, as we used to, it's more than just now a decision, I don't want to have a baby. Oh, this is not a good time to have a baby. That for a lot of people, they're looking at the fact, my goodness, I just had little Johnny. He can hear, but he can't speak. Or little Johnny got a problem. His eyes, they go off in this direction and that direction. Or he has manifold slits, or a problem because mama drank too much alcohol during her pregnancy, and so you're seeing these babies being born. So then you look at it, as they have DNA testing. A mother now, through no fault of her own, it could be that her mother nursed her on strontium 90 during when we were growing up and they were detonating all those bombs. Any high energy radiation tampers and messes with the gene pool, genetics. And so when you talk about abortion today, for me, it is very important, for the simple reason is we have to talk about when to terminate a pregnancy or when to not terminate a pregnancy, when to remove or expel the embryo, you know what I'm saying, to the fetus, from the uterus. Now, this idea of life and breath and soul and spirit and the essence of the personality that is the attached to the creator and to the DNA and the sacred spiral and all the other types of things that we are discovering through the frequencies and through all kinds of things, there's hope that we can repair DNA. So if there's hope, then there's a spark of promise. But if we are going to live in a world where medical is being reduced, the care, and who will care for the baby if you take the risk to have it, knowing that it has a 23rd chromosome or a 26th chromosome or it's got, you know, things going on in it, who is to say that individual, you know, knowing that it come from the outside, from the government, from the environment, I mean, Barnwell, all of the cancers that are coming up, and why are we having all these vaccines for against cancer? Cancer is a virus. So you can pass that on to the baby. AIDS. So now, talking about abortion is a challenge. It is a challenge for young people, young women who carry mutated genes, and they told us it wouldn't affect our generation. It was something that would affect generations down the line. So we're mutating. And we're evolving, and the promise was is that we would evolve in a higher elevation, in a higher thought, in divinity. Had we been morally responsible, then we wouldn't be having to talk about abortion. If we had been psychologically in tune with our citizenry, we wouldn't be dealing with all the mental health problems we're having today. If we had had one iota of sense, we would be looking at our alcohol consumption.
Mm-hmm.
We would be looking at sugar consumption, feeding the brain. We're not dealing with the real, because our people, Americans, are so busy focusing their attention on American Idol or looking at ridiculous pablum on CNN and not really going and doing their own due diligence, their own research. So as far as abortion is concerned, we're talking about a decision to terminate a pregnancy. at a particular time. With the way we have, and I'll just sum it up this way so that everybody gets back to it. Go back to 1947 to a Nobel Prize lecture by a man named Mueller on the damage that can be done, and we're talking about the gene pool, the hereditary damage that can be done, genetics. So it's all in scheme for the Nazis, who are the ones who were in power that created all of this stuff, because they were warned, and they did not heed that warning. More bombs, more x-rays. Here, get your feet x-rayed. So we don't know the effect of something that was not supposed to be in our environment in the first place. And we have Madame Curie and Henri Becquerel, and you go back to the high energy. But it's Stanford. It's University
Reverend,
of Chicago.
Reverend Roxy, I got to take a break here, but
all right.
I want you to hang with us, and
so,
when we come
you're
back
you're
going to
abort
break,
me right now, aren't you?
No, I'm not. We're gonna pick this up, but I got to take a break here.
Okay, let's
I'm going to make a short and sweet statement when we come back. You're listening to Evident Footprints, and it's call-in night. And we got Reverend Roxy Hampton with us, so we'll be right back. Don't go away, folks.
A monthly 24-page newspaper in its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few remaining newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you? Subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. The Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At hempusa.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At hempusa.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from hempusa.org.
Welcome back to the second hour of Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. And we have a caller on the line, Reverend Roxy Hampton. How are you doing, Rev?
I'm doing just fine.
You know, what was coming to my mind during the break there is two issues. Number one, and I did mention Thursday and Friday that we had talked, and you know, this isn't pontificating so much as it is answering many emails where people were saying, "What can we do? What can we do?" You know, you're showing them things that are definitely messed up, and they want to be problem solvers. They want to get their feet wet and get into these issues and affect some positive changes. So I went into a series about how we take responsibility, how we identify problems, how we communicate with each other, and this was going through my mind during the break, is that in solving the problem, we have to agree that we're going to talk about this without attacking one another. This isn't about attacking the messenger. It's about coming to a solution. You bring up your points, but we have a tendency to say, you know, that if you think a certain way and it's different from me, that you're all wrong, and therefore I'm offended by what you say. I think there are ways that we can arrive at conclusions that take the I out of it, because that's our problem, is the ego. We're not seeing the big picture. We're not seeing the relationship that we have and the oneness with all life. It's not a selective issue. Well, you know, I forget the mosquitoes over there. I never didn't like them very much. And while you're at it, a couple of abortions, you know, you can throw them in the pot with the mosquitoes. We tend to get rather impersonal about life. And I think we're making a big mistake when we don't honor life. I may be wrong. And if I am wrong, then there's nothing to worry about, is there? But if I'm right, we got a lot to pay. What do you think, Rev?
Well, I think, you know, every week we open it up. As you open your mind, let life be the thought. As you open your eyes, let life be the glow. As you open your ears, let life be the melody, layer after layer after layer. As you open your nose, let life be the scent. As you open your mouth, let life be the breath. As you open your hands, let life be the flesh, layer after layer. As you open your heart, let life be the heat. As you open your soul, let life be the torch. And as you open your being, let life be the juice, layer after layer after layer. And so for me, that's life. Now, I am a eunuch for the Lord. All right. I never had no children. I never had no great loves. I have loved God all my life. And so when I speak about abortion to people, I have to come from a more practical, and I have to sometimes come from a scientific point of view, because it's man's problem. God gave us this, he called it to Eve somewhat of a curse, that she would have to bear children, that it was her punishment, and it wouldn't be easy, that it would be painful, and we read these things in the Bible. But life goes on, and then one was sent to help us to deal with the sin of the original sin, which is all, for me, lessons for us to pay attention to, because you can apply them to the now time. And so however we speak, there should be, no one should be afraid of a word, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A word, you want to break that word down, and then you want to look at it in all kinds of ways. When you talk about abortion, you talk about Planned Parenthood, or the church, or you can get into a whole lot of different issues. But to shut it down because it makes you feel a certain way, that should be explored. And so, therefore, you know, they retreat. If you want to bring it out of them, you want to. Let's desensitize ourselves from this issue of wanting to talk about it and look at it for what it is. And everybody is an individual, and everybody is living this life and have their own patterns of being. And so, you know, if they can't tolerate talking about issues, we're in deep kimchi, I always say.
Yeah.
Especially if you've left it out for a couple of days, you know what I'm talking about. I mean, woo-hoo-wee.
Yeah.
Rev,
let me make a comment here,
yes.
If I may.
But do you feel me when I'm
saying? I feel what you're saying. Absolutely. Yes. I feel with what you're saying, and I agree with you.
Oh, good. Especially with the high-energy radiation we got going on, you know.
You know, when you look, I mean, what you're talking about really ultimately is righteous living. Now, none of us are perfect.
However,
what's wrong with striving to be perfect? What's wrong with striving to be the best that we can possibly be?
Isn't that the truth? You know, as a musician and me as a singer, you know, you have to practice. It just doesn't come. You even if you are a person who has been playing all your life, every time you get ready to make a performance, you practice. Why? Because practice makes perfect, and perfect practice makes perfect. So there's nothing wrong with trying to imitate the characteristics that have been left to us about what it is to be a creator, the love and mercy that the Creator has had on us, the love and mercy that particular prophets and inspirational people who have come into our lives to emulate. They say, act as if and it'll soon be a reality. I like that. You know, act as if, like we say, I am a flower, becoming God, becoming a flower, becoming God. Somewhere in there's the process that never stops.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because
yeah.
It's all, it bears fruit. It doesn't wither. We know what it looks like. We know what the true soul life that's connected to the Creator looks like in a human form. We know what it looks like. We've seen it many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
And
now,
this is what we're dealing with today with the elections and the feelings that people are walking around with. Over here in Hawaii, everybody's busting their buttons, Don. But, you know, we have a court date on November 18, 2008. A judge has set a hearing to hear Andy Martin's case.
Uh-huh.
And the defendants are Linda Lingle, our governor, and a doctor, Fukinino. And I can't pronounce his name too well, but it's Fukinino. And on November 18, 2008, they're going to have a court case. I guess you know about this, right?
Yes.
That's for November 18th.
Yeah, I've been following this.
You know that date is the 30th anniversary to the date of Jonestown, where 909 African American, Negro American, whatever kind of Americans and whites died in the jungles. American citizens died in the jungles, murdered in the jungles of South Africa in the British Guiana. So what we're looking at here is 30-year anniversary, and on that date there will be a certificate, birth certificate hearing in a Hawaii court on November 18th. So I thought I'd put that out for your listeners to, as a kind of like a flash. But you won't hear, probably won't hear anything like this on the news. But the case is going forward. So if people want to hold their breath, they're really going to have to hold their breath. It's incredible. The other thing, I was reading your article in the Idaho Observer, and you talked about purple lips. Was it you? Yes. I have purple lips.
Do you?
I do. I have Asian blood in me. I have manifold slits. My eyes are almond, and I have purple lips.
So there is truth in what I said then.
Huh?
Are you saying there's truth in the conclusion I came to?
Well, in terms of genetics, we threw out all we know about physics and metallurgy when the 911 towers came down. Jet fuel, you know?
Well,
so I
didn't. I
don't know what people obey in terms of science and history, but for most of us out here, researchers, what we can say, just like we said, we have a biracial president, it's important for people to understand that, when you say African, you also have Arab. You go back to the Sudan region where the tribe that his father came from, and what you have is a man who is an Arab American. You see what I'm saying?
Well, his birth certificate, where it says race,
yes.
Is I don't say it's his birth certificate. I say the one that he presented as if it were
on his website,
a valid certificate of live birth. It says under the father's race, it says African. Now, African is not a race.
In fact, in that time, they
would have said Negro if it was Barack Obama Sr. And so that whole document is not just a forgery, it's a fabrication as well.
Yes, but the one that Lingle has under seal that will be presented on November 18th will be his original birth certificate with all of the information on it, the hospital, parents, whether they were married or unmarried. There's a lot more information that comes with a birth certificate as opposed to a certificate of live birth. I have, for example, being adopted, my birth mother and father, only known to the state of New York, of which I've never bothered to retrieve this information, I have a certificate of live birth, a birth record, piece of paper. It bears the names of my adopted parents as being my parents. No hospital. My birth certificate looks like Barack Obama's birth certificate. I mean, the one that he presented to you all on his website. So all I'm doing is putting out some information that I find kind of coincidental, that I'm adopted, paternal uncertainty, maternal uncertainty in my case. I do have purple lips. I am light-skinned.
Are you a naturalized citizen?
I can't even answer that question except that with a certificate of live birth with a raised seal from the state of New York, I was able to get a passport.
Okay. Sounds like you're legit.
With a certificate that said the names of people who did not birth me. You see what I'm saying? And it doesn't say adopted. It doesn't say. It says that these people, that this is my birth mother and my birth father. But I was adopted when I was 4 years old. I remember answering the question, do you want to go home with these nice people over here? You see what I'm saying? And I shrugged my shoulders. My mother told this story over and over and over again. My sister, who is going to be turning 80, she remembers when my mother brought me over to her house, just to give people an idea of how it can happen. Is my sister knew nothing about her mother, who she had already had three children already, gave her three grandchildren, went out and adopted me and dropped me off at her house and said, I just adopted this child. You watch her. I have to go to work. I'll pay you. And that's how I entered into the family that I was in. Now, all I can say is that I have a niece through this adoption in this family who lives in Chicago, who is married to the Farrakhans. So I am trying to explain to people, I didn't stick around for the charade and grew up. I got out of the family and moved to California and gone on with my life knowing these facts.
Now, are we to think that you might be related to Lynn Cheney?
I have no idea who I'm related to. I know one thing, and I know this about you, and I know this about me and Dr. Lynn. We're children of God.
Yes.
And we live in the kingdom of heaven. And the rest of everybody else out there better hurry up and start acting as if. And if you should find out, America, and we have to say these things, should there be, because there is a hearing going on, should he be vindicated, then we move on. But there's a lot of other reasons. When I think about Obama, I say, well, now it explains why all those people from Canada would go over him. You know what I'm saying? And there, you look over the shoulder and you see the Bronfman's distillery, Canadian distillery people, and mega movie people, Warren Buffett and these kind of people. So, hey, let's get on to it. November 18th, 2008.
Now, Phil Berg's lawsuit is in front of the Supreme Court on the 1st of December.
Yes, yes. So there are birth certificate there. And you know we have to prepare America for the ultimate aha. Aha. This is how they work. And we can't take to the streets like they did when Martin Luther King died. It's not worth it. We shouldn't be striking like they did. I just got another copy of The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. It's absolutely chilling. I opened the page up and I was right in November 10th, with the birth of the Reich in 1933, and it just goes on from there. We're suffering from a lot of 35, 55, 85 year, cycles here. Within the plan. So, and they said it would be 1,000 years. We haven't even at 100 yet. It blows my mind when you think about what kind of plan they have involved for us, and that may explain why Germany was so gaga go go over this, and they made this big demonstration, and he spoke at the same place that you know, he traveled the same road as Reagan and Kennedy, you know, facing east and all of that. I mean, they're doing some weird stuff. But
well, speaking of some weird stuff,
I love talking about weird stuff.
I think you'll find it extremely interesting that I have a photo of Stanley Ann Dunham's first grade class. This photo has not been seen by anyone out there. Okay, Stanley Ann Dunham is the mother of Barack Obama. Now,
come
are
on,
you gonna,
Don, tell me. You
are you going to ask me that big?
Here.
Are you going to ask me that big question?
Well, having worked school? All day today, I don't know what big question is. So many questions I could ask you. Let's see. Your first grade class, and we know that there was something really seriously. She was 7 when she was in kindergarten.
That's right.
So she would be 8 when she was in first grade. Got a kindergarten for a year, and so you're 8 years old. Okay, so what would be interesting about Anne?
Well, it didn't happen in Kansas. It happened in Oklahoma City.
Right.
And that's a place that's never mentioned in any of the books, any of the histrionics of the family. It's excluded. And the reason why it's excluded is because her parents both worked for the CIA.
Okay, yes, yes. I would definitely agree with that, especially with the way people describe her her mother's banking acumen, I guess you would call it, acumen.
Acumen, yes. Her mother was one of two female vice presidents at the Bank of Hawaii.
Yeah.
Her job, I discovered, and I found this out actually on the 4th, on Election Day. Her job was an escrow agent.
Uh-huh.
Now, I found that in a sort of a soliloquy by one of her former employees at the bank, who described the day he was hired, and he described what she was like, and he paints a very different picture of Madeleine Dunham than Barack Obama does. In fact, she wasn't a racist, never uttered a slur of any kind, had no fear of people, regardless of what their background was, and never used any kind of foul language. She was the chief escrow officer at the bank, and she also moved mortgage loans. In other words, she sold mortgages. And one would think that that might be a conflict of interest there, because you're holding the money to maintain the integrity of a transaction, but at the same time she's negotiating in transactions. So it raises a red flag, and it goes along with my research. She was doing exactly what I determined she was doing. And she retired in 1986. Now, what's interesting is there is another couple that's mentioned in a book by Frank Marshall Davis. And you know, if you followed either Jerome Corsi or Andy Martin's investigations, you know that this is crucial to Barack Obama and his story, because there's some speculation that maybe Davis was the father. Now, I'm not saying that. These are other stories out there. But in one of Davis's books called Sex Rebel, he's specifically talking about a three-night tryst with a couple from Seattle named Dot and Lloyd. And I discovered that most likely Dot and Lloyd were Dorothy Yamamoto, the other female vice president at the bank, and Lloyd Yamamoto. And there are such people. So it really reveals some interesting facts behind the scenes, and I have every reason to believe that they were CIA agents as well. So this story changes its complexion completely. There is a CIA dossier on Stanley Armour Dunham having stolen blueprints to a plane being developed at Boeing in Wichita, as well as sabotaging some planes. Quite a different story from what we've heard about the furniture salesman from Kansas.
Well, you know that he has admitted to the fact that the book that he wrote about his father and was full of what he called, I can't remember what he said exactly, but basically he made up, these people are kind of real, but he made up and kind of changed their names or something, or who they were. And a lot of people have taken issue and have used that book to find the truth, because I don't know if I said it the last time I was on your show, but I'll say it again. For most times my father taught me, standing on a lie, like standing on an ice cube in the middle of the ocean, you're bound to fall off. It's going to melt right out from underneath you. The lie is going to melt, and you're going to fall into the ocean. And you know what he said? He said, when you're in deep water, become a diver. You know? Go down there. Hold your breath. Go on down there and think about it. When you come, stop fighting it. Just go on down there deep, 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 and come up and tell me something else. Tell me the truth. You got two shots at it, you know? And you go down for the third time, your lie stays with you, it stands, and the punishments come, you know, the shame.
Mm-hmm.
And shame, you know, it's interesting that sham and shame,
mm-hmm.
It's also interesting that with shock you turn white and with shame you turn red. It's the blood. So there are a lot of things that are going on. I don't know. Maybe they're trying to make fools out of me and you, setting us up bait and switch to make him the great martyr. And everybody has been following a disinformation, all cleverly planned for you to find, Don. Do you ever think that they are planning all this evidence just for you? because
yeah,
we have
yeah,
the
right.
Footprint.
Well, what is that going to prove?
Believe me, I'm only kidding. But I'm only kidding. But the
hey, I can always fall back on my music. You know.
There you go.
Well,
yes.
I, you know,
so much more
what's
to
interesting,
life
and we need to be fair to Barack Obama, too,
yes.
Because John McCain has a similar issue, you
yeah.
know, and that's, you know, the amount of time that elapsed until the hospital he was born in actually was built. 7 years is a long time, you know.
Now, I have to ask a question. Is it really clear to your listeners what you're talking about? Because in terms of, it doesn't even matter if he was born here. There seems to be some kind of thing going on with his mother being of age to pass on this. It's like 16 plus 5. She would have had to be 21. She left the country. She took
oh,
him
yeah,
somewhere
yeah,
else, filed for citizenship. She was underage. She was not 21 when she
that's
filed
right.
for citizenship in Indonesia. So Andy Martin's case is not only that. It really doesn't even matter if he was born in Hawaii. If you found him in a hospital when she went globetrotting and took him with her and then signed him up as an Indonesian, and I mean, it seemed like they wanted him to be from everywhere. They were placing their bets on where in the world they could control, and that's why I, too, lend towards this these Edward, how you say, H.L. Hunt and Edward Hunt, with the one with the Watergate and all, he was a writer and author, you know, like trying to put out 16 books in 1 year or something like that. It was ridiculous. And people like Gerald Ford, who wrote Portrait of an Assassin, a whole book that people need to go back and look at, that this president, who wasn't a president then but sat on the Warren Commission, wrote about Oswald. Well, he wrote it. It stands in time, but when you match it against the Senate Select hearings on assassinations, the Church Committee, when you even look at the Garrison case in Louisiana, you wonder what was Gerald Ford taking at the time that he wrote that biography, and you realize this is all CIA. They had their own printing press. They could print any book, one copy, and bring it in as evidence in the Warren Commission. When Mae Brussel asked to see that book, calls John J. McCloy on the phone, you know, and says, mm-hmm. hey, and this is 1964, you were waving around this book in the hearing, you know, about assassins. I'd like to get that book. I'd like to read that book. And John J. McCloy said, that book doesn't exist. But wait a minute, right here in the hearings it says, did you have this book? And he says, there is no book. And from there, Mae Brussel, this wonderful researcher, started saying, I need to start checking out not how many bullets, but who was Oswald? And that took her into the whole CIA and the Texas and the Mexican banks and the whole way in which they do things and how both sides are being funded and there is no Howard Hughes and blah, 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 you know? And you start bringing it up. So that's why we have to keep digging and we have to just keep at them because we don't want to have the proverbial wool pulled over the sheeple's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Back to you, Don.
Well, you know, I was talking at the earlier part of the show. I was talking about the issue of us meeting these problems and with a sort of resolution, buttressed by responsibility. We take responsibility individually for this stuff, and in a serious matter. Not say, well, you know, it's not right to talk about these things. It's not politically correct to talk about this, so therefore we're going to let it slide. We will not solve our problems by doing that. We are at a point where we have to start, jumping off the merry-go-round or the Ferris wheel, whatever you want to call it, and facing these problems with a seriousness an intention that we are going to solve them, because if we don't do that, we're gonna destroy ourselves, and we're down that path anyway. We have a handful of people doing that to the rest of the planet, and I have a hard time imagining that God, the Father, created us for that purpose to have that end befall us. I really have an issue with that. As I'm sure most people who really consider that, Now, you've got to be awake enough to see that that's what's going on. That's where the sheep will come in, is they're supporting the cause of these people that want to enslave the rest of us. And it's only going to last for a certain amount of time, and it's got to destroy itself. Look at the economy right now. Look at the jobs. Look at our educational system. Look at religion, organized religion. It's all falling apart. And everybody's sort of, well, it doesn't really affect me. I don't belong to any of that stuff. I don't go to church. I'm finished with school. You know, just take my kids there. I do my job. I come home. I eat. I watch a little TV. I go to sleep. I wake up and I do it all over again. And really no direction, no sense of purpose. And very unhappy with life. Not much money saved up, if any at all. And the fact that we're not going to have a currency in a short amount of time. And we're going to have empty shelves in the stores, and you're going to have illnesses and pandemics that are artificially created with the intention of getting rid of people. What are these people, when are they going to wake up to the fact that this is being planned?
Yeah, I always tell people progress speeds us up and results in not so much time. So, you know what I'm saying? It's like people think that, you know, you think about the way in which a person could possibly think about a horse. You know, a horse is a very fast creature. But if you made it bigger, would it go faster? It would be out of proportion to what it would be. It wouldn't be, it wouldn't be able to run. I think the same thing is true about us as human beings. I think we're out of proportion with what we're supposed to be. And this idea of the Superman and this idea of the hero runs its course throughout our history. And we're always looking to someone else to be the hero, to be the one to save. And I think that now the practice is to be that hero yourself. You see what I'm saying? To be the hero yourself.
Yeah.
To take and seize the moment of opportunity for plain speaking, to put God first in your life, the Creator, whatever you want to call them, in your life first, and to operate from that. And the way we get help to do that is not necessarily from other people, but from divine inspiration that can come from just opening up any book and seeing with your eyes the positiveness of the Bible, the hope of the Quran, the synchronicity of the Jewish prayer book to the Quran, to the Bible. All of these books, you'll find inspiration in them, all coming back to the source, to the one God, and then fashioning that self after that particular characteristic. So it's like this spiritual mental health that you have to do for your soul. It's like polishing yourself. And sometimes, you know, with all the dents and scratches that we have, you know, from all the bruised egos and the stabs in the back and everything, we need a rough cloth to kind of to get smooth. Before you can start to polish, you have to roughen out, you know, smooth out those. And that's can be a painful process. But shows like this and Dr. Lynn and BBS Radio allow people to explore that which they may not have had time to be exposed to. And that's the beauty of why we have to talk about all things. This is talk radio. When you start saying what makes you feel uncomfortable, you know, we've always said it. There's the bleep, the delete, the, you know, you can pause, come back, go to the bathroom, come back, and it all changes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if you stick with it to the conclusion, and then you hear it back in the archives, you know that there's food for the soul there, that with the soul life you can comprehend these things. It's not about belief. It's not about acceptance. It's about spontaneous mass motion of approval for sense, for God's sense, for God's sake. And that's, you know, where it goes. While you're going down all those rat holes of history, trying to stop us from going down another, you know?
You know, you brought up a good point that reminds me of another thing that I wanted to mention, and that's this issue of the I, okay? The I. the ego. When we consider the ego, we always do it in the sense of what is known to the ego. And the ego learns something, and then when we say, well, I've always known that, or I've known that for a number of years. Right there, the self is moving back in time. The ego and the knowledge are both in the past, and we're not in the now, and we're definitely not planning for the future. We're repeating the same mistakes. We've got to come out of that. In fact, we have a call, Bill from Vancouver is on line 3. Bill, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Yes, great. Enjoy your show.
Thank you. You have a question or a comment, Bill?
Yeah, I was just wondering if you guys believe in that we all kind of create our own reality from our thoughts.
Absolutely. I think we create our reality, or in the state we're in right now, Bill, if you'll allow me to say this, I think we've allowed others to create our reality for us, and we haven't really thought things through, and we haven't used our real discernment from the heart center. We've used what I've been calling the heart mind, or the mind heart, which is the thinking and the feeling in your thoughts. There's nothing wrong with thinking, but it's also the place where the ego resides. The ego doesn't reside in the heart itself, where real true discernment takes. It's where your opinions and your false realities reside. And those are in the mind, where you can store information in the consciousness, or tap into the subconsciousness and the lies that the subconsciousness has been fed. So in that sense, I think that's a metaphysical interpretation that could, over time, be argued very, very well.
I was thinking maybe that's kind of what the future of humanity is, to figure out how we're creating what's happening within ourselves, and it's obviously reflecting on around the world. So that as soon as we start to want to create a different reality, something that's different than what we see now, then those changes will happen. And I see that happening around me.
If you answer a question or try to solve your problems through the ego, you're going to do it through the I self. You're going to be doing it with that aspect that again is like the mind heart. It's not the soul heart. It's not the heart center that listens to God's voice and discerns God's voice, or anything holy. It could be the Holy Spirit too. Holy Spirit will speak through your heart. And when you hear that voice, you recognize that voice. No one else can tell you whether you're hearing it or not. You'll know it. And your decisions will reflect that, too.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's like the presence that's there that we all know. It's there within everybody. Like the source, the magic presence of our source, or whatever you call it.
Well, it's where our imagination or our imagination resides, in our real creativity, our true creativity. And it's not where fear resides. Fear finds no home in the heart. It can do that in the mind, and it can do that through heart-like feelings, and that is a ploy that the ego uses, and that's the ploy that the controllers use to reinforce that in those of us that are operating from the ego.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, do you have a comment on that?
You know, I love talking about the ego, and I even more love talking about the alter ego, the other self, which can really get complicated when you start talking about that. But for the caller that's calling and talking about thought, one of my favorite things to do is to talk about thought and thought life, and how it connects the mind and the body together and brings into reality. So thought life, they say that we've entered into the fourth dimension, of which thought takes form. I think that thought, that's why when people meditate, yogis are able to do what they call the ultimate yoga is Zazen. Empty mind and forget. Empty mind, no regrets. Empty mind, empty mind. Will yourself to forget. We all have the ability to remember. In fact, our whole society is based on the ability to remember. And yet, this power to forget self, to forget how important. I think heroes, when they run off and save people in a burning building and carry them out, they have no thought of self. Only of something that they have to do, and where does that come from? You know, when you just run and forget your whole idea of losing your own life. So thought life is a wonderful place to go. If we stayed there, we'd be exploring all the psychic apparatuses that are available to us. It would get us into defense mechanisms, rationalization, projection, the kinds of things that we do to protect the ego or the alter ego or the super ego or whatever ego is manifesting itself. Truly, if people were able to understand thought life, they'd be able to break it down and maybe not jump to conclusions. They'd be able to tolerate, like tonight, conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, the big light bulb comes on and we're all happy and it's all flowing. So yes, my caller's there. Thought life takes form. I think that we passed through that already, and that is what's really blowing people's minds. Evil thought, good thoughts, they all manifest themselves, and so we have to caution ourselves as to what it is we think about, and you're very right. If we think positive and tune into positive, then that's what's manifested. You can't make a negative cause and suffer a positive effect, and vice versa, so that's my slant on it.
Yeah, I think the one thing that bears repeating is that when we go into the past, we are still acknowledging time. We're actually limiting ourselves by keeping our whole framework about a solution as if it's something in the past. That's that old saying that, you know, if you're doomed to repeat the same mistakes if you keep employing the same methods. Over and over, we're just going to keep repeating these mistakes.
There's a good book for that.
They may not happen in our lifetime. This is how they program the business world. They move things apart in stages so that each generation gets reintroduced to the same concepts, whether it's clothing or the style of a car or all the different fads that they have, hairstyles, and these are all ways to relate to the false self, the unreal self. And yet, if we're going to be creative, we're going to make something new, a solution that hasn't presented itself yet. We're going to free ourselves to use our imaginations and be more creative yet. It's not just for the purpose of solving problems, but for moving and forward or upward and evolving. Does that sort of answer your question, Bill?
Yeah, that sounds great. That's exactly what I'm talking about. That whole evolution you're talking about, where we're heading towards, where we start to lose the fear and create things that we want, and we see these other things that we're talking about that are happening. There seems to be, like, what's going on with the government and all that is things that we don't want, definitely as a people, and we need to start focusing on, like you said, imagining a different world.
Yeah.
I
think it's worth talking about to the extent that we acknowledge what the issues are, what the problems are. We have to identify them. And not pretend that they don't exist, and we just go about creating, because those problems are still going to be there, and they're going to affect us, whether we're aware of it or not. That's the point I'm making. Is that it's an awareness thing. It's an attention thing. You've got to put your attention on it, and we have to work together and focus in a serious manner. Not this. Well, you know, this isn't politically correct to approach this problem. You know, Tell me one thing that politicians do that's correct. And I show you what an oxymoron that term political correctness is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's sick, but it's like sometimes it's humorous to watch and see what's going on.
Yeah, it's a phrase used to attack the messenger. It's like the new phrase, conspiracy theory. No, it's not a theory. It's a conspiracy. It's people working together to cause harm to others. That's what a conspiracy is. There's no big mystery about it. You see?
Yeah.
So the spin is designed for the head. It's not for the heart, because the heart knows that it's spin. The heart knows that that's an illusion, and that it's not real, that it's temporary, and that it's really not even worth the time to even talk about it. But we have to acknowledge that that's what's going on, because there are so many people affected by that, swept under by that.
Yeah. It's good that this information is coming. I think there's a reason why it's coming out in the last 10 years. It's everywhere on the internet. People are well aware now that, and it's probably from our own consciousness that we're bringing us through to see this is absolutely the wrong direction where we want to go.
I would say it's our consciousness and not theirs. You know, it's not the controllers.
Well, it's hard. I still haven't figured that, but I understand. That's where I come sometimes get puzzled as to where that consciousness began, where the consciousness that we, like you're talking about in the heart, where did that mind consciousness, where that began?
Well, you know, what's interesting to me is, you know, people say, especially metaphysicians, they say, well, you got to be careful what you talk about, because you put your attention on what they do and it comes to pass. Well, they're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
That's actually helping us. That's actually making us aware of what they're doing.
Yep.
You see, it works both ways. It doesn't mean that we can't acknowledge that or recognize that or talk about that. We have a choice. Ultimately, we can make our own decision. We can come together like we're doing right now, discussing this like adults, like caring human beings. We're being what we're talking about. Instead of just victims of it, we're actually taking the action.
Yeah, agree.
And that is empowering. This is about power, ultimately. You see?
Yeah.
Well, you have any? I didn't know I was going to have a guest tonight. I have a guest now, Roxy Hampton.
I can
get off so we can have somebody else call in.
You can hang with me. You know, this is cool. Do you have any more comments or questions, Bill?
No, I think that's kind of what I wanted to focus on right there, because I really do enjoy your show and listen to it as much as I can. I get getting all that information. A lot of the stuff I wasn't well aware of at all. I've been listening to a lot of conspiracy stuff, and I listen to Alex Jones a lot, and he gets really pissed off on his show, really angry about what's going on. Whereas you seem to be keeping it cool. You're keeping it calm. You're not. I like the way you're bringing the information across and how you're open, being open-minded about it, and letting people call in. And
I'm no saint myself. I have my nights.
In fact, I seem to call on those nights.
Yeah. It's the spirit. I have to tell you that. This is not a head thing. The spirit tells me, tonight's a night that you should leave open, that you shouldn't book a guest for this night. And look what's happening. I've got people calling into the show, there's a lot of emotion. Dawn had some really interesting things to share in the first hour. She feels very strongly about some of these topics. And I tried the best I can to just express to her that this is, this message is for a cross section of people, and I might touch on something that's offensive to somebody. The intention is not to offend, but stop and ask yourself this question, too. In light of everything we've been talking about, how does God look at the fact that we've had almost or more than 60 million babies aborted? 60 million. That's one-fifth of the current population of the United States. That's a lot of babies.
And within those babies, one of those might have been the next helper that is promised to us in the Bible. So yeah, there's a lot of ways in which one can think about that and mm-hmm. see why, like the Dalai Lama say, we don't hold life precious anymore. It's not a precious gift anymore. People who used to celebrate the birth of a baby, now you say I'm pregnant, and people go, oh, that's too bad. Are you going to have it? You know, that kind of thing. You know. Because they don't value the life that they could even consider asking an individual, you're going to keep it, you know, especially as times get worse and worse and worse. So, yeah, it's a wonderful thing to have this, you know, open. And for Don, I know why he's so cool and collected. You know why? Because when you start to research this stuff, you just can't give your life force up to this evil, this well-planned and conceived evil that has been going on for a long, long time, and that we have to practice some serious self-restraint to be able to bring the good news to people. And that's where Don is. We want to get to that. The good news is for most of us that we all know we have a life, and that our life is as precious as those people that think they're at the top. And that only God can, or the Creator, is the only one that can put those people in their place. But we can keep vigilant, and as they say, on the watch, so that when our Father returns, when the Helper comes, we'll be able to recognize them, and recognize that Helper in each other. And that's mm-hmm. why we practice.
Our you know, what comes to mind, Rev, is, and this goes, are you still with us, Bill?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, this comes to mind. We become apologetic for the things that we say sometimes. And if we're not apologetic, then we're accused of taking an extreme stand on an issue. And I think one of the things that people are very fearful of is judgment. And judgment is really it's a tool of the ego. Ultimately, it doesn't serve the spirit. The spirit doesn't make judgment. It makes observations. God will make an observation in a free will universe. He'll leave it up to us, ultimately, to punish us for, punish ourselves for things that we do. In some religions, that's referred to as karma, where you create your own problems. You create the solutions too. Ultimately, you are going to have to pay for those problems one way or another. So it serves us well to help each other in solving problems together, not letting each person suffer by themselves. That was a case that it's pointless for me to be on this radio show and offering solutions. And the reason I do offer solutions, they may not be the best in the world. Some people may not like what they're hearing at all. But I don't hear a whole lot of people out there offering solutions for some of the types of problems that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that, Bill?
Yeah, well,
as a listener.
Yeah, I do like the perspective you're bringing across. Because it does offer, there's people that are going to resonate with that, and they'll be able to see in their own way how they can offer up their own service too, to how they're going to pass on the word and bring truths that they see in their own individualistic ways. Everyone has their own way of doing it, whether you do a radio show or newspaper, or how you're going to bring across a message to people about how we're going to free ourselves as a society and inner freedom and all that. So I like all the different perspectives I see out there. You know, even there's so many of them. Like David Icke's another guy I like to listen to who brings a hold. I mean, his a little bit gets into a totally different realm, but he also offers these kind of solutions in different ways.
Yeah, it's funny. I've had discussions with folks in the last 2 days that have asked me to get him on my show, and I'm actually taking some steps to do that. I don't know if he will come on. I know that our research is very close in many, many areas. It crisscrosses, and I have to say that I've actually done more reading of his stuff after I've accomplished some major pieces of research, and I wasn't really influenced by what he was putting out, and I was surprised to see some of the parallels. So
yeah, there's a lot.
So I know that's God doing that, and it's the same with Jim Mars and some of my work. Jim's work and my work crisscross in many places. And I have to say that's God that brings the truth to both of us. Or at least we're willing ourselves to go out and find it. And is it a coincidence when two guys independently come up with the same information? And I'm not talking about going down a path that's laid out for us, because the way they lay out history, it's designed to steer us in the wrong direction. That's very evident.
Yeah. It's like the matrix, that whatever that means.
You know, well, it's like being inside the box or being in a cage or a maze, you know.
Getting outside of the box is where you start to think, like what you're doing is stepping outside the box.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And seeing where the truth is for you. It is amazing, all the parallels. And there's a few other people I've read. I mean, I've come across it. There is a lot of parallels. I don't know if you ever heard of the Montauk.
Yes. I've talked to many of the Montauk boys, particularly Al Bielek, who's like the grandfather of the Montauk. Mind control. So, I'm very familiar with that.
The whole thing. Yeah, it's all coming out. It's all like being revealed all over the internet. And it's so available. I've heard even, I don't know if this is true or not, but I've heard that if Google and some bigger search engines were deciding at one point that there was going to be just some kind of monopoly that was going to happen, where people were going to be charged for internet access on all sites, so that these smaller underground sites weren't going to be available for people anymore. And there was actually a conscious effort to do that, but I think it's actually not going to happen.
Yeah, that's more the fear-mongering again. They put this stuff out there. Let's just get creative and create our own system, you know?
But that's exactly, that's why it's like, when I looked at that, I'm like, wait a minute, how could that happen? Because all that, some guy's just going to create his own search engine and his own, you know, and people are so creative with that kind of thing. You can't stop that. The internet's just going to continue to go on, and that's where there's a lot of freedom going on.
Well, I think we got to go knock on Al Gore's door, because he said he invented the internet, and I remember it was supposed to be free.
Yeah.
You know? So we'll hold him to that, right?
Yeah.
Well, Bill, thanks for calling. Got to let you go, bud. It's time to wrap up the show. Call in again, and all you other folks, Don out there, please call in again. And Reverend Roxy Hampton.
Yes, Don.
You were quiet there.
Oh, well, I could talk a hole through a tin pot. I mean, seriously. History is my favorite. I mean, I'm making history as we speak. I would like to be your guest. I'm going to be so bold as to ask to be your guest on November 18th for the anniversary of Jonestown, for the revealing of Barack's birth certificate. A drum roll, please. And because I'm out here in Hawaii, in this state, I will work between now and then to try and get my hands on some birth certificates from people born in 1961, and also what is a state-issued copy or certified copy of a birth certificate. I will try and track these two down so that we can continue to look at this and also to discuss Jonestown as it relates to what might happen in the future and how we as Americans can maybe perhaps have some prophylactic thought about what to do when faced with genocide and these words that were invented in such a short period of time. Antibiotic and genocide, both created in, I think, 1942. These words.
Well, we have to stay away from the Kool-Aid. That's one thing.
Oh, please. yeah, we Kool-Aid. Do, really. That's a great Kool-Aid.
Kool-Aid ain't cool anymore.
yeah. Anyhow,
well,
I enjoyed myself.
I have the 18th is actually open. So
cool.
There must be a reason why that stayed open. So if you want me to book you for the 18th, don't forget it. Don't be
leaving. Oh, I won't forget it. And I want you also to know that my candidate won.
You mentioned that the last time you were on. So.
And I am her legislative aide, so you'll be seeing. I'll send you some links about the candidate. She's a total Hawaiian woman. And she's a real interesting character. So
we can have her on the show too.
Oh, definitely, definitely, but not on the 18th.
Okay.
She's such a positive woman.
We'll try the 19th. How's that?
Yeah, we'll look at it. I have to check her schedule.
Okay.
So I'm gonna hang up.
Rev, thanks for phoning in, and I guess we'll talk soon.
Soon.
I'll hear from you.
Bye.
Okay. Bye now. Okay, folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and we had a surprise guest there, Reverend Roxy Hampton. We're going to have her on board on the 18th of November, and I've got Mr. Ken Adachi on tomorrow night. Actually, for everybody now, it's tonight, so just the time thing. Everybody's in the same time zone now, as far as the date is concerned. And Ken and I will be talking about a bunch of different stuff. He's got some really, really interesting research going on right now. And so we'll be all over the board tomorrow night. And later in the week, I have Michael Anthony and Jim Murray coming on. And we've had a few more requests to try to stay on some of these solutions, and I don't want to be so redundant, but we can move on to some other things. I actually wanted to get into the issue of order, and in a way we did that, but not nearly as deeply as I would like to. Order is quite a bit the opposite of the chaos that we have. And yet there is a particular approach to it that if we don't really examine it in great detail, we will continue to feed the chaos, even while we're attempting to bring order about. And it really has to do with what aspect of ourselves we approach these issues with. If we're thinking from the mind and from what is known, we are operating in the past. What is known is a past tense of the verb to know. And in knowing, in real time, synonymous with being, then you are creating and you are empowering. And so we want to focus on learning about order and creating order in our lives, focusing to bring about order, but doing it in a way that we're acknowledging what is going to produce illusory results. They may seem real. You've heard it mentioned that we're walking in a dream, or we're walking in an illusion all the time. Life is an illusion, and we've been living through one the past year or two for sure. And I'm not saying this is a new phenomenon, but they're ramping it up big time right now because we are awakening. be looking at my website, directlightproductions.com. Hopefully, I'm going to have a piece out in the next day, which is a follow-up of new research for the article, The Three Stooges Go to Washington. This is important stuff because it leads us to the truth. And I have quite an interesting picture and an interesting story that goes with it, related to one of the participants in this whole presidential scandal that we're going through right now, at least via the alternative media. I want to thank you all for listening in, and join us tomorrow night here again on bbsradio.com. My special thanks to Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and Seth Hendrick for doing a great job on the sound tonight, handling all the calls. And special thanks to Don and Bill for phoning in, and Reverend Roxy Hampton, also our surprise guest. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.